Before moving on with the case, I need to make a correction on something I said in part one. In giving background info on Guy Jr., I stated that he had spent one semester at Georgetown University in D.C. I misspoke. It's actually George Washington University in D.C. Georgetown just rolled off my tongue, and I didn't even catch it until after episode 5 was published. Sorry for the mix-up. Also, I'd like to give you a reminder that this episode contains graphic details that may not be suitable for all listeners. Now, on to part two. I'm Rachel Underwood, and all I think about is crime. Right, Josie?
Experience in law enforcement, we've not had anybody this detail oriented in preparation for body dismemberment, decomposition, and disposal.
That was Detective Jeremy McCord, a veteran law enforcement officer. He was the first one through the door at the Guy home and the lead detective on the case. So now might be a good time to give a little background on Joel Guy Jr. I'm now just going to call him Junior. He was born in 1988 and spent most of his young life at a boarding school. He chose to go to boarding school. His parents didn't send him off. This is what he requested to do. He wanted to go to boarding school. In 2006, he graduated from the Louisiana School for Math, Science, and the Arts. And from there, he went to Georgetown University in D.C. He stayed there only one semester and then transferred to LSU and living in an apartment in Baton Rouge until 2016 when the murders happened. And where, get this, he allegedly was training to become a plastic surgeon. Although he's 28 years old, he's still in college, and all of his expenses were still being paid by his parents. They were paying his rent, tuition, books, insurance, food, all living expenses, anything he needed. It was all coming from his parents. And as a matter of fact, his mom had been working full time just so she could pay his expenses. Lisa Guy was a human resources accounts payable administrator at Jacobs Engineering in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And Joel Guy Sr. was a pipeline engineering designer, and they were both retiring. They were retiring and had recently sold their Knoxville home and planned to move to Hawkins County, Tennessee, where Joel Sr. had some family land. Because of the retirement and downsizing, the parents had made the decision that it was time to financially cut off Junior. It's believed that Lisa had a conversation with Junior in early November where she told him about the plans and that they were going to sell the house and no longer be able to support him financially. And this is very important because this is the trigger that sent Junior on the path of writing his very own handbook on how to plan and execute the murder of his parents. November 29th, the day after the bodies had been discovered, the Knox County detectives start driving to Baton Rouge to locate Junior. They had his address and his cell phone number, and they notified the East Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office, and EBRSO started the surveillance operation. License plate readers indicated that he left Sunday night on November the 27th, and his license plate was picked up in various states between Tennessee and Louisiana. While the detectives are en route to Louisiana, they get a call from the ATF in Baton Rouge letting them know that Junior had just purchased a firearm at Academy Sports. The Academy Sports location is very close to his apartment. When he purchased the gun, he was actually still bleeding from the injuries on his hands. And his blood is on the paperwork from purchasing the gun. So why does he need a gun now? His parents are already dead. Well, while the detectives have been on the road headed south to apprehend Junior, Back at the Knox County Forensics Lab, the forensics team has been sorting through items found in the parents' home, and this included a backpack owned by Junior. Inside the backpack, they found a spiral notebook. This was Junior's how-to notebook on planning his parents' murder and the process of disposing of their bodies, and this also included best case and worst case scenario considerations. Very detailed information on supplies and items needed to carry out the murders, but also a list of his mom and dad's assets, including a $500,000 life insurance policy with a note written below it that read, "With him missing / dead, I get the whole thing." Well, Junior does have siblings, and with the purchase of this new gun, the detectives were concerned that he could be planning to use it to make sure that he would be the only living heir. Because of this, even though the detectives were still traveling to Baton Rouge and had hoped to do a bit more surveillance before arresting him, they told the Baton Rouge Sheriff's Department to apprehend him if they saw him headed to his car. And that's exactly what happened. He was taken into custody on Tuesday, November the 29th, as he headed to his 2006 Hyundai Sonata in the parking lot of his apartment complex, where a meat grinder was discovered in the trunk of the car. The Knox County detectives arrive and are able to interview him at the Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office, where he refuses to talk. He never asked them why they were there. He never asked if his parents were dead, because he knew. Even after all of his prep work and his planning, the murders didn't go as he had hoped. He left a very messy crime scene. He left his backpack with his murder book inside. And by now, he knew that law enforcement had seen it all. I wonder when it occurred to him that murder is harder than he thought. Detectives get a search warrant for his apartment and find many of the same items that were in his parents' house. A bookshelf full of medical books, plastic tub with chemicals in it, in the bathtub. It had a decomposing bone, and that bone was later found to be a dog bone, a bone from a dog. He was experimenting on how long it would take for a bone to liquefy. His black rubber gloves were hanging above the shower rod. The shower head had been removed so that he could attach a garden hose to it. There were Clorox wipes, a receipt for a knife found in the Knoxville house. Detectives also collected surveillance footage from stores in Louisiana where Junior had been caught on camera buying supplies that he would later use to murder and try to dissolve his mom and dad. He always used cash and used the self-checkout where he could. He was documented buying murder supplies as early as November 7th, and that's a good 18 days before the murders. On November 7th, he purchased some chemical items at Ace Hardware. November 18th, at Home Depot, he picked up a bleach sprayer, extension cord, and a timer. November 19th, Academy Sports, he got a K-bar knife. And November 21st, as he was pulling into Knoxville, getting ready for a holiday with his parents, he stopped at Walmart, getting a blue plastic bin that was large enough for the dismembered bodies to soak in while they dissolve. The case went to trial in late September 2020 in Knoxville, Tennessee. I believe this was the first case after the courts in Tennessee had reopened during COVID. Joel Guy Jr. pled not guilty, but also filed a motion that he be given the death penalty if he is convicted. The notebook found in his backpack was presented by the prosecution. I'm going to read some of what was handwritten by Jr. in his notebook. Here is part of the list of bullet points. Okay, so on this list, he'll make his note and then he'll do a dash or an arrow or an asterisk and make a couple of other notes about why he wants to use this, or why he wants this on the list. So I'm gonna read this list, and at points I may say dash or arrow or asterisk. That's what we're just reading the additional notes here. Okay, so the first bullet point is get killing knives - quiet, dash multiple. And then he has an asterisk out to the side that says, get carving knives to make small pieces. Get sledgehammer dash crush bones. Bring blender and food grinder dash grind meat. Get bleach dash denature proteins. Get plastic bin for denaturation process. Does not matter where they're killed. Just get rid of the bloody spots to prevent evidence of time of death. In parentheses, it says, not the mattress or the couches. The next bullet point says, get rid of bodies inside the house, dash, there and my DNA already there. Open up doggy door to provide entryway. And then he crossed that out, and to the side of it, it says, he needs to be blamed, comma, not intruder. Flush chunks down the toilet, and in parentheses, it says, not garbage disposal. Get plastic sheeting for disposal process. Get hollow point bullets, just in case we'll be seen buying bullets. He crossed out, get hollow points, and beside it put, will be seen buying bullets. And then he says, just use gun in computer room. And then an arrow. And it says, check to make sure there are bullets. In parentheses, it says, last resort. The next bullet point. He's not alive to claim her half of the insurance money. And then an arrow points, all mine, $500,000. Flood the house, comma, covers up forensic evidence. Turn heaters up as high as it goes. An arrow. And then it says speeds decomposition. Bleach reacts with luminol, just like blood. And then an arrow. Douse area with bleach. Next point is big sprayer. And then lie. Trash compactor and a question mark. Underneath that, it says body gives time of death. And then he has an arrow pointing to alibi. The next point says, don't have to get rid of the body if there's no forensic evidence on the body. The next bullet point is in all caps. And it says his fingerprints and DNA. Okay, so part of the ruse he was going to create to get his father in a vulnerable situation was he was going to break the garbage disposal in the kitchen, and then he was going to have his father, or he assumed his father would get down on the ground underneath the cabinet, and that's where the next list starts. It says he's on the ground, stab him while he's on the ground fixing it. And then an arrow that says, kill him with a knife. Clean up mess from him before she gets home. Kill her with knife. Kill dog. And then through that, he has crossed that out and put, take dog with you. Place her in the shower. Turn on hot water. And point at her to get rid of forensics. Remove her clothes. And take them with me for disposal. Place him in plastic bin and use it to place him in plastic bin and use it to get him into the upstairs bathroom. Here's some of the gruesome part, or more of the gruesome part. Cut off his arm and plant his flesh under her fingernails. Place her hands with his DNA, so that his DNA is not washed away by the shower. Use chemicals to destroy his soft tissue and soften the bones for transport. And then the next thing says, baste once every hour to accelerate. So he's talking about basting, moistening, like you would a turkey when it's cooking. based once every hour to accelerate. Then the next line reads, flush chemicals down the toilet, wash out bin with handheld shower, and then direct handheld shower into the toilet to flush everything out of the pipes and into public water. Douse killing rooms with bleach. The next part of the list says, place hair curler with flammable paper and flammable place hair curler with flammable paper and flammable containers of gasoline in four locations. His killing room, her killing room, his bathroom, her bathroom. Wipe down areas near killing rooms and bathrooms. Turn heat up to 90 degrees to melt fingerprints and dry everything. Set her phone to send me a text message late Sunday to prove that I was in Baton Rouge and she was still alive. Leave through the front door and wipe down all the knobs. Timers for flammables set for Friday at 10 a.m. Sunlight masks fire, and in parentheses it says, but not smoke, comma, everyone at work, so they can't report it. He also has a page where he scribbles down what he knows or thinks he knows about their assets. It's in two categories, his assets and her assets. Under her assets, he lists her life insurance, $500,000, and in parentheses it says probably more with double indemnity. Under that, it says, with him missing / dead, I get the whole thing. The next item says, all of her other assets are joint, and that's underlined. And then under that, it says, go to him if missing / unknown if he is dead. And then under his list of assets, it says, in parentheses out to the side, include all joint property if missing. When he goes missing, all joint property / also gets joint debt. And then under that, Knoxville house / homeowner's insurance possibly, but probably worthless after the fire. And then there's a dash and says, oh, $100,000. And then on the Hawkins County house, it says appraised at $400,000+, and then in parentheses under that, it says worthless with Renee on property. And I think Renee, I can't remember if Renee is either Mr. Guy Sr.'s sister or his cousin, but he owns that property in Hawkins County jointly with some other family members on his side of the family. Under that, it also says, It gives a listing of their vehicle and recreational assets, her car, his SUV, his boat, his old truck, and there's a line underneath that, but I can't read what he's written. But I think what we know with him making the note about Renee on the property and it possibly being worthless, but with that property being worth $400,000, since he wrote that, we have no reason to believe that he wouldn't have stopped at killing his parents. If he hadn't been caught, who knows how many other family members he would have tried to take out to get what he thought should be all his. By the way, Junior's defense team did not dispute that the handwriting in the spiral-bound notebook belonged to him. In court, these gruesome details were revealed. Joel Guy Sr. was killed with a knife in the upstairs exercise room while his wife was at Walmart. The crime scene showed evidence of a tremendous struggle. The blinds were torn, blood covered the walls and the corner of the room, and his Bowflex machine was flipped over. He was stabbed 42 times, with the cuts being 6 to 7 inches deep. His clothes were cut off with a pair of scissors and were carefully placed in a pile. A bloody pack of cigarettes were laying on top of the clothes. His hands were removed at the wrist and left on the exercise room floor. Lisa Guy arrived home from Walmart, dropped the bags on the floor in the entryway of the hall, and went upstairs, where she was attacked by Junior and stabbed 31 times with so much force that 7 of her ribs were completely severed. Her head was then removed, taken downstairs, and placed in a stock pot on the stove and heated. Both bodies had their arms and legs removed, Guy Sr. at the waist and Lisa at the knees. Their torsos and limbs were put in a bin of chemicals to dissolve. Each torso had a large gash inflicted post-mortem so that the chemicals could leak in more quickly. So to wrap things up, here's what I think. The trigger was the conversation with his mom in early November and knowing that he was being cut off financially. He immediately started to make a plan and put the wheels in motion by creating his checklist and his collecting of supplies and tools. The motive was the money. He wanted his mom's life insurance money. The plan? Murder them both and make it look like his father had done it. The good old apparent suicide murder. The flaw in his plan? He didn't plan to be injured on both of his hands. His plan to catch his dad in a vulnerable position was not as easy as he thought it was going to be, and Dad initially fought back. He had planned to set the house on fire and burn as much evidence as possible, but that was spoiled when he had to leave town earlier than expected. Maybe that was to get his wounds treated. On Sunday, he was treated at the student clinic in Baton Rouge. But he was not giving up yet. His plan was off course, but he was calling an audible. On Monday, we know he went to buy another gun at Academy Sports. He was going back to Knoxville with a new gun. Was this gun for another family member? Was it in the event he ran into law enforcement going back to the house? Who knows? But overall, the major flaw in his plan was with his timeline. He didn't know his mom's office had planned a party for her, and when she didn't show up on Monday, her friends jumped into action by relentlessly contacting law enforcement. In October 2020, a Knox County jury found him guilty of 2 counts of first-degree murder and 2 counts of abuse of a corpse. He was sentenced to 2 consecutive life sentences plus 4 additional years for abuse of a corpse. The judge in the case pointed out that Junior never showed remorse and commented that he had a sick and depraved mind. He also stated that he didn't think the defendant would ever change at any point in the future and that he believed himself to be smarter than he is. In 2023, Joel Guy Jr.'s appeal for a new trial was denied by the Tennessee Court of Criminal Appeals. A quick note on production. As an independent podcaster, I do all of my own research and production. At times, this means sorting through mounds of news articles, viewing TV media coverage, reviewing police cam videos and 911 calls for hours. Sometimes it means watching full court cases, either in person or on playback recording. If you're enjoying learning more about the cases covered here, please do me a big favor. Head over to Spotify, Audible, Amazon, or wherever you listen to my podcast, and leave a 5-star review. You can even leave your thoughts on why you enjoy the show. And why does this matter? It really does help other people find me. I need to get 200 more listens before the end of August to jump up in the rankings so that this podcast gets more exposure. And that helps these cases get more attention so that we can learn from them. And hopefully this will lead to catching some of the sick and depraved behavior before it manifests into murder. If you want to share this podcast with your friends or on social media, on the Spotify app, you can click the 3-dots drop-down menu at the top of my podcast page, and you'll see the option to share to your socials or to a specific person, and they can learn more about these cases too. Thanks so much for your support. If you have a suggestion about a case you would like to hear covered, please click the voice message link below at the bottom of this episode, or feel free to email me at allithinkaboutiscrime@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at All I think about five. That's the number five. All I think about five, where I live tweet each Friday and Saturday night with the On Patrol Live community. Until next time, thanks for listening. I'm Rachel Underwood, and all I think about is crime.